in order to get somewhere, they have to give up one or the other. I mean, in our society, if a woman really wants to be professional, she's going to have to limit herself to a certain type of man that she can have as a mate. And that's first of all. The majority of women are heterosexual, let's face it, you know. So, I think that's a very big factor.
I think that it's a factor, but it doesn't seem to be like an adequate explanation for a massive superstructure in society with all sorts of institutions and all blocking this end. I mean, I think that the fact that women are the fact that women focus so much of their priority in terms of men has many aspects to it. You know, that it's a combination of one, it looks so hard in order to get ahead that it's easier to concentrate on getting married. You know, because it's just you look around, there are facts.
But then, what about the woman that really falls in love with a man? I mean, you know, there are some straight women that really like men.
Well,
know?
I mean, it's another issue about falling in love, and that can be, you know, and fantasy life.
But what happens to a woman who does like men, you know, and she really cares for a man, and then she has a problem, because most men who are straight do feel that a woman has to take care of him, or wants his wife to take care of him, and, you know, keep house and all that.
But
that looks like the problem.
Don't you think that, Belinda, I know that in my own case, you know, you take that sometimes as an example. It's not a truth, but it's a truth sometimes. That when I got married, I was 17, and I really didn't see an alternative. Because, I mean, I'd run away from home, and my mother thought that, you know, I was, I don't know, wild, or she interpreted it however she wanted to, and that I could not go away to school, so I'd have to stay at home, close by, which was the situation where they were. And I honestly didn't see, because that had been what I'd been trained. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, what's extraordinary is that I honestly never thought of just going away and getting a job. But I found that then, as far as, say, in terms of what you call sexual dependency or the focus on men, that as I found myself more and more, that my relationship with men, the spaces between my relationships got bigger and bigger and bigger because they just wouldn't do. I mean, this attitude towards me, if I had to choose between my humanity and having a man, see, that's my question to you, in a way. You said that women do not, they act stupid because that is the price to get a man, which is, it's true. But why is it that women do not say, my humanity is more important to me than getting a man? Not just that you've got to have sex with somebody and this is not that, but that your humanity is more important, your self-respect, your, you know, the dimensions of your life are more important than a relation. In other words, you want good relationships, but you're not going to sell yourself off, you know, simply for a relationship. How do you account for that?
Well, some women have more of a need to love somebody and be loved than to separate their humanity from it. I mean, some women's humanity might sort of fall into that loving somebody and being loved by them too. And if this person unfortunately happens to be heterosexual, then she has a problem.
No, but I'm just saying that I noticed, and I'm not saying that this proves that it's political, but it's a clue that there is some basis, see, that the more I came to be somebody within myself, I don't mean to other people, but I mean I was divorced when I was 22, 32, that as I just started painting, you know, that's where I was at, and I started finding myself, and I started to have a life. I mean by that a life within myself, an interest, you know, that my toleration for abuse became lower and lower, so that it seems that there might be some connection with that for women. And, you know, so in other words, what I'm trying to say is that women aren't stupid, but women don't do this just to have a marriage. There are other factors going on there in terms of alternatives, that it's not a sufficient explanation. And that if it's not a sufficient explanation, what you're trying to say is, it seems to me, that a lesbian, by virtue of being a lesbian, has a personal solution. That this is the personal solution in terms of being a woman.
Yeah, I
means you're not oppressed.
No, I think that being a lesbian effort made it easier because you don't have to choose. And heterosexual woman.
May what is it?
Made it easier to be yourself, to fulfill yourself, because you don't have to make this choice, that you do not have to say, well, if I fall in love with somebody, I'm going to have to give up my humanity. Because you can fall in love with somebody and still preserve this humanity, because you will not have to give it up because the person you're with won't insist that you put it aside because you're competing with them.
Excuse me, but I've seen lesbian relationships where one of the partners has indeed given up her humanity. There are very oppressive lesbian relationships.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying that it's not necessary. I'm not saying that all lesbian relationships are great and that, you know, that's a solution to everything. I'm just saying that a lesbian does not have to make this choice. That it's very hard for a heterosexual woman to be able to fall in love and marry a man and still go on about her business and find the right type of man that will love her for what she is and will want to see her function and be the most that she can.
I think so. I mean, there are not very many men who love me for what I am, or I have to admit.
Well, you have to give them a chance too, you know.
Oi!
No, I'm saying that there's some people that you have to give a chance to see you in some situations that, you know, it depends on the type of person you like. You know, if the type of man you like happens to like a woman who's a housewife, well, you know, that's the sort of thing, and you're stuck because you don't want to be a housewife. So that's.
I think that perhaps maybe we're quibbling over definition. Before you said that unfortunate, quote unquote, unfortunately there are heterosexual women who need to be loved, to love and to be loved. I think there are lesbians too who need to be loved, to love and to be loved. And I think we have to question the word need.
Right. Well, most people don't want to be alone, and in a lot of instances, you have to choose whether you're going to be alone and be, you know, yourself, or sacrifice something to be with somebody else.
See, the common values. What I'm trying to get at is that people behave in relationships or situations like this workshop in terms of how they see themselves. Now, if I did not feel oppressed. If I did not think that the fact women were oppressed and that I'm a member of that class did not have definite bearing on my life, I mean by that my past and my future, I would not have, let's say, the same motivation to be here or to have done any number of other things that I didn't want to do, I mean actively didn't want to do at various times in the women's movement. And that's what I'm trying to get at, because I think in part it's that, and in part it's will. Let's say, I'm not sure if at a certain point there would be no way to convince you that you were oppressed no matter what you do personally, and that the only salvation, that you can never be free personally until women of the class are free. I'm not quite sure myself where argument and trying to get something across is not possible because of other reasons. And this is, of course, you can say I could be wrong too, which is, of course, true. You know, even if everybody else here agreed on the other hand, but that does not mean that you're wrong. But I wonder, this has been brought up by other people here in terms of, I want everybody to sort of see it. I am moving in sort of progressive way in terms of theory construction, but I want it to be very integrated how it relates to what we're talking about. That, in other words, the political context. That reason, is it a choice or is there a point that even, say if there was no discussion, something was the truth, would there be a point at which there would be no way to get through to that for very strong emotional reasons, except over a period of time. You don't understand what I mean?
No. Are you saying there's some things true and a person won't see it?
I'm saying that I think it's good if you don't think that you are contained by this class and it is a personal present problem for you. I think that is what you think. I don't think you're putting it out as a false argument. Now, it seems to me very clear that any woman, even though it didn't for certain periods for me, I thought I was an exception in a way, and I had a lot of evidence just in terms of how few women were doing it, I think. And then, but in a broader way, I found that was just a minor variation, and that I was one of them. But it was like, not just intellectual, it was like a real gut understanding, and like the bottom just fell out of the world. And that kind of thing, like realistically, probably in my lifetime, I was always going to have to be aware that I was not whatever human being had the right to be, that was true. Mm. Now, is that something that you can cut through intellectually? That's what I'm feeling now when we're talking, because I'm trying to think, how can I get, since it seems so clear to me that, I don't know your personal life, or by that, your personal life, I mean, you know, where you live, the situation there, the school and everything. And it might be easier then to bring up certain instances. I can't believe that you are not daily reminded of the fact you're a woman. And because of that, that you receive different treatment and different, that the possibilities for your future are very much contained by that. So I'm a little bit lost in terms of how to pull, like.
Yeah. No, I think I saw what you're saying to this. But I was wondering if maybe the proof of that kind of thing will come when the doors to freedom are completely open. Where, you know, like now they're not, and so we can make, as far as our socialization goes in terms of who we are, our experiences are going, equal our amount of freedom to some degree. And that when things are completely free, if we ever get to that plateau where they're completely passive, then the choices made in terms of how free you would be would be greater in the sense that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, but what she's saying, that Jesse is saying that she does not think that the fact that she is a woman limits her choices.
Sure, but maybe her, as you brought up, maybe her experiences haven't contributed to the fact that she doesn't know that she's not free. Does know that she's not true. Because it just might be that she just hasn't experienced enough of the kind of things to prove to her that she's not true.
So
I can't conceive of that happening.
May I say something too? I guess in the last session I also mentioned, on the first even, that I don't feel oppressed, and I wonder if I need this feeling. But because me, maybe it's a little different. I don't really feel it that much either. But it's slowly creeping up. And I also say, by the reason also why I came here is that I was sick and tired of my own inactivity about this. And
but why would you have to be active if you were not personally? I mean, look, it's not the most attractive place in the world to be the woman, is it? No?
Well, I mean, really.
I think it's better to be called a feminist than a lesbian.
Well, I've been called a lesbian more times than I have a feminist. That's probably more in a good position. Right. but see, that's where I think, that's what gives me a clue of an inconsistency, because, who would get involved in this kind of thing? I can tell you, I wouldn't be doing this work stuff. With all the shit that, you know, I'm likely to get in many different directions, if I didn't think that it's going to make a difference somehow in the long run, and just unless I was hurting awful bad, you know? I wonder, you know, why would you be here if you didn't feel that?
Even coming to DOD to say it's out the feminist group must tell you something about being oppressed. Otherwise, even a lesbian wouldn't come unless you felt something was wrong or different. You know, you go to the organization because you want to organize yourself against something.
Except a lot of people in the obese that have looked like going to California. She said, the OB really must have changed an awful lot in New York. The OB must be really different because it's getting so political. A lot of people object to, they're not saying exactly they're in the problem in being a lesbian, but that DOB is not the place to do anything about it.
The whole purpose of the organization was oppression.
No, but see, what I'm trying to get at is, again, we're bringing a reasoning process, and that's...
When you go around and speak and you see the different ways in which women evade. Even if they're women's ideas, there was some women yesterday who had written down everything that Ayn Rand was saying, but they couldn't answer questions until they checked it with their notes. And yet they were passionately sure they were talking about. Then you have what you have in the feminist movement a lot is there are a lot of mistakes. Somehow they're the kind of mistakes that other people pay for. They're never mistakes on the side where you get beaten up by pigs or something like that. So I realize there are two elements. One, that I know I myself went into philosophy because I was writing aesthetics and I didn't have confidence to write out a theory, and two, I didn't know how, really. Very few women do. And the main thing that I hope can come out of this is that the skills that I picked up in like 7 years, philosophy and doing theory construction, that some of this can come across, and also if you want to develop different aspects in each person, you know, you pick up something that fascinates you and you develop that. I can tell people where to go for more stuff on that. That people will really get the skills, and that also people will build up a lot of self-confidence by using these skills among ourselves, which women rarely get a chance to do, of argumentation, the different forms, but also how to build a theory and different elements that are involved or can be involved. And then, too, out of this would come some possible theory constructions. And after that point, hopefully, that would just take half of the workshops. And then by then we can read de Beauvoir's Second Sex. And in rereading it myself, it was very painful because she had a lot of influence on me. And looking at it now, it's like nothing. Now, she belongs to a different school, and it's not as... Right. And you have many different ways of checking it out. But we can then read that and develop critical powers on that for an analysis. And then read something like The Century of Struggle, and also put together some of the documents of which I have about 4 or 5 tools on this movement, and maybe, hopefully, we'll see what went wrong in the but most of all, I assume people who are involved in this know something about me and what I would be after, and that I'm not playing around. I'm not with a group in an intense way because people did see me ultimately still playing around. I want to be on my own. But we time is not under our control, and I hope that there'll be everybody here, but at least most of the people, who really then develop all these areas that haven't been touched it's just been almost nothing done on feminism. So, in terms of theory construction and why it's significant, at the beginning of this movement, people said the feminism, you know, women discriminated against, and everybody knows what the problem is. Nobody even knew what a problem was, much less what it was. What they meant by this was, we know that there's economic discrimination. Okay, yeah. Now, I was sitting there thinking everybody else did know, because I went because a friend of mine had asked me to go to the meeting. So I thought, well, everybody else here knows what the problem is. And every time somebody would come up, well, I was turned away from a bar. Somebody else had to go through changes at a bank. And wherever there seemed to be a problem was, say, the first people in the group who would or it took me quite a while to say, how come we're hitting here like the Help Wanted Act, rather than here, abortion? And they said, well, because it's bad. But there are a million things that are bad in terms of women. And we have a very small amount of energy that we can count on to stand up all the way, that is, until you die or you get what you want. So you can't just fling it every place. You don't have much. So the first thing is, people don't know what the problem is. Part of that comes from either willful ignorance, part of it perhaps because they just don't have the skills. Now, I think theory construction, when you break it down, and I wish, like, one reason I was late too was, I've been thinking about the workshop, and I have my own priorities. I'm supposed to be doing this theory construction on my own. But this seems important too, and I can't spend as much time. I mean, I realize I'd like to spend all my time preparing. So the question, what is the problem, is where you get into methodology. How do you find out what the problem is? And basically, it is common sense. And if you relax, use your common sense on questions as much as possible. Talk, not so much to me, but at the first sessions it'll be more with my participation than later, because later it should be, hopefully, this, we'll see how well it works. But when you say, what is the problem, okay, on women. But how do you, so in other words, what I'm trying to get at today is, how do you make a map? Because people are going to be moving on the basis of the map. And if you're wrong, you're going to have a lot of people dropping over a cliff where you have a river or something. So it's pretty serious. And to be as precise as possible, to say nothing, if you're doing theory construction, that you are not absolutely certain of, and to break everything down to the smallest number of variables, especially to begin with. So when you say something like, women, something's the matter with the way women are treated. Now that's something that everybody would agree with. And you have to reduce it just that far. Nobody agrees what? Never mind what caused it. Just happens. Don't ask. And you have already two forms. It's pretty clear before you can talk about what happens between two grooves that you have to have the nouns in that sense before you can talk about the relationship in between. So you really then do break it down, first of all, to women. Now, this is very important in theory construction. That people say there's a problem, that this. It's just a, but it's a mélange, makes no sense. So that in a theory construction, that, I know yesterday there was a problem because somebody was saying, well, either you have an inductive theory or a deductive theory. It's not that way. I mean, there are components of both. There are some theories with much more empirical matters than others. But your initial premise must be supported by evidence. There are no feelings involved in theory construction. If you have feelings there, they have no interest to anybody but yourself. Because other people are going to pay for them. So your first premise, you're going to have to prove with exactly what you're saying. Like, for instance, it took me a long time to figure out on that basis what might sound trivial. Or I remember once Baby Dan said at an abortion hearing, when I was saying that abortion reform was anti-feminist, she was saying very loudly in the back, oh, there's T. Grace with petty distinctions again. It was like, really had seen that in a women's movement. So for a long time I tried, are women discriminated against? Are they oppressed? Or are they persecuted? Now these are obviously differences in terms of degree and how bad it is. So that you put together all of those figures you have, everything you've read, to determine just how bad it is. Now if you think each time, first of all, when you think of words and distinguish them, I've found it helpful to first of all say to myself, before I go to the dictionary, what does this distinction seem to me to be? And write it out. And make certain that that's what you think exactly. Then you look it up. See what these distinctions are. Now discrimination is basically superficial and not really a whole pattern. What I came up with. Oppression is where you have a network. Now this is, I'm not talking now about theory construction, I'm talking about why I say women are oppressed. I personally say this, how I came to this conclusion. I'm not saying that's right, I'm saying I think it's right because I've checked it everywhere I know. Hopefully at the end you can challenge me. That's the whole point. And persecution to me always seemed to mean that somehow you had nothing to do with it. There are certain problems with this, that is, that kind of means it's irresolvable. But also, I think that all you have to do is spend a day in the women's room to know we've got a big hand in it. There's a lot of cooperation, not to say collaboration, going on. So if you, to build a whole theory construction on the oppression of women, you start with your smallest number of terms. You make absolutely certain that they're stable. Now from this premise, you can deduce premises from it that have no new parts to them. If you add anything, another term, or whatever, you must support it with evidence. So that's why very often you have several premises in theory construction. Now theory construction can get very elaborate. These are what seemed to me in working with it in political theory, the most helpful concepts. So that's where you usually have, the first premises almost always you have to support by evidence. Then you can play around with these premises deductively, that is, in and of themselves. The notion of evidence, that is, that if you say, like, women are oppressed, and what this means, and you define your terms, This is not done, women's movement. It's very sloppy. They do not define their terms closely. So this means that there's a lot of equivocation, which means that you have a theory and you're talking about, say, like, for instance, sex. And then at a certain point, say, and by sex you mean ABC. Now, about halfway down, you are still using the same term sex, but now you're using it referred to EFG, which is equivocation. So that you end up saying nothing, because, but you seem to be saying something. You started here, you end up here, but your definitions have changed. That's how you can end up with some pretty weird conclusions that usually amount to, I should be paid by the government to spy on you. I mean, that's the kind of place you can arrive at. That's why it's so dangerous. But that's also why it's so convenient to people who are afraid. That's why it's so important women develop the skills of thinking, but also it's a very exciting thing to be able to grasp reality and start to get control of it in that sense. I mean, you become a master of it, which is makes you feel a lot better, you know, but you're not just so sort of lost. Now, in defining just the term women, and that's a class, how do you define that class? How are classes defined? And to again take the most reduced definition possible. Just, I think it's always helped me not to make certain kind of mistakes. If I remind myself I'm dealing with people's lives, and one of those little shades of mistake, that could be somebody over the edge. Like all the time people were playing around their minds with abortion, we were losing two women a day. And sometimes, very often I think, you have to give people who didn't understand remarkably and didn't seem to bother them too much. I keep remembering those people might not have done. That seemed to bother them. Mistakes are very costly, political theory. And with no map, it's really irresponsible. How can you have this movement growing and it's going no place? And if you talk about a problem, people say, I've been told often, it's male to think rationally. And you say, the extreme point of this is our strategy should be to be irrational. So they say, how am I going to know what you're going to be doing? That's a rational question. So they have now, I'm somebody who can entertain any idea because I love ideas, and I'm sure if this is at all successful, everybody here will really begin to enjoy the whole sensuality of the mind, which is really very exciting. It's cheap too, you know. I like painting and stuff. And it's a beautiful thing. It's very, very exciting. And out of it too, I mean, that becomes the excitement, the thrill of it. But also you're doing something very important for yourself, for the people you're concerned with. And if a few more people learn how to think, now I'm not quite so sure that people are really smarter than I am not to think, you know, there's always that question. But if a lot of people really get some of these skills, and we all now know each other, right? So we can all, everybody knows everybody else, so could if they wanted to, then we might even have a chance. Kind of wild thought. So, I was thinking of just simple things of if people were interested and not to get involved in very much stuff outside. But there is a piece, these are just four things I brought. And, you know, you see a lot of workshops that should be done, you know, while trying to put this together. Now, analytic philosophy is a fairly recent development in the last century. It came out of a school of scientists. largely in Vienna, and developed especially in England then later. Now, it's attacked a great deal as being picky. It's attacked metaphysics always very hard, so of course it's unknown in theology. And it's only worked in political philosophy on very small parts of the problem, like what does the concept of justice mean, or the concept of like class, because Marx was a total, well, he had a good heart, you know, but he was the crappiest logician. Well, you can't use the term in connection with Marx. He was the crappiest philosopher probably also. And he had some ideas. His theories are in no way related to the quality of the ideas. So you can imagine how one must look at the potboilers that now come out of being, they feel that they are now speaking from Marx, which is kind of a nightmare. But analytic philosophy, is called being quite picky and so on, does not deal with feelings, that's subjective, and it is not subject to evidence of proof. Yeah. So anything that you talk about, political theory, with proof, seems to me, but this is especially significant for political theory, there are consequences. Very serious. So you take this very seriously. You check out everything. It seems to me especially important. Now, the existentialists, and I think we're going to see it a lot when we read de Beauvoir, talks a lot in terms that seem to mean a lot to people who use them. But in no way can be defined in some way that they connect up. They end up being kind of, well, one of the popular ones is we need to demystify the sex roles. Now, it seems to me that telling, that translates into men don't understand their oppressiveness. All you got to do is tell one to get off your back to find out. They know. But it's that kind of thinking, existentialist, or the other and self and, you know, all this, but it doesn't get down to talking about classes, which is going to be your basic unit. Now, what I'd like to see here develop is, every time somebody says something, you should be saying why. Why is class basic as a concept? How do you define class? Always, I mean, I think too it's important for women. I saw it just one other time, and I was really impressed. It was just somebody who's rather good, not at all feminist or bonus. And I see women, you've got, in philosophy, you've got to, any time, no matter how stupid you think the question is, or you're unsure, this is the place to find yourself and get on your feet. No matter, that's why it's important people come every time, because something else if somebody misses three times and then comes and says, why, and everybody else knows. But you have to really develop a critical faculty. Keep in mind, you're making a map that you should be expecting other people to have reason to believe that you've checked and that they might act upon it. And you were going to be responsible for what happens to them. So that theory construction, and there are many aspects of it that become also very fascinating. You think of it like almost making an abstract painting. And in fact, theory construction is like in this book here, if people care to look at it. This is an article on it, came from the Oxford School, just on theory construction. There are all sorts of not minor problems, but sort of fascinating problems about how many counterexamples can you have before, in fact, your theory is thrown out. Now, I tend to be very compulsive. I think none of the legal theory, because I'm going to be very embarrassed when the counterexample comes up and says, I went and I lost a leg. You know? But there are all sorts of whole bodies of problems that are very interesting and that that the more you know about that, the better you become making the map. This is just, it's very important to learn how to think. Well, we don't ask questions. It's amazing questions that aren't asked. So we have a large amount of following. Even when people are talking about we want to get rid of elitism and everything, that just becomes another follower leader. Don't follow elitism, and I'm the non-elitist leader. But it's the same kind of psychological compulsion that is participated in eagerly by the people following, too, because then they didn't know. They're not responsible. So the whole point here is to develop a certain faculty, a certain strength, certain self-confidence that is based in fact, unlike no matter what you do, you're wonderful. So that's why this is of interest, and it's small. This Problems of Philosophy by Bertrand Russell, it just, of all of the small things I know, it just reading it gives you a sense of that kind of taking apart of ideas and also dealing with some of the most important problems that I think ring home for even us. He's a man, I considered that. The first one is appearance and reality. Recognize? That's like, men are the reality, right? And the woman's into image. Right? The existence of matter, nature of matter, idealism, on induction, on a priori, which is basically something that has to stand by itself. Universals, truth and falsehood, and so on. The value of philosophy. So, if people want to...
I'm sorry, this is a workshop. This is a workshop night. I'm sorry, did you sign up for the workshop?
No, it's not.
Marty, the action meeting and the workshop, you can switch this week.
Yeah, I thought it was March. No, it's mm-hmm. Switch. Mm-hmm.
Just for this week.
Just for this week.
I'm sorry, we made lots of announcements.
We switched to Thursday,
so
next week will be Tuesday.
Well, we're full. We have our 15 women. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
You can't. Mm-hmm. Even if everybody dropped out, it's not going to work with people having gone over. The purpose will be lost. This is sort of a small one on philosophical analysis, just in terms of language and technique. And what I'll be doing is trying to take everything that I've been working in theory of instruction for like now 7 years, and I'm trying to bring out sort of a distillation of what seems basic theoretic instruction and what I've seen women, the fallacies that women seem to fall into most often, and what I notice when I go around and speak certain evasions of theory. So you may have, I mean, it's not essential you look at these, but there are some interesting things. This is really very good, the elements of logic, in that it's unlike a lot of mathematical or like mathematical logic and extrapolation, that this deals with argument forms. This is something that gives women a lot of confidence, and I've seen it, where you deal with fallacies and you start to understand. And then you also, you're able to pick apart you're pick a part and a spot, and you practice. I mean, there's a lot of practice around available. And you say, ah, that's the fallacy of equivocation. You know, and you know, women aren't logical. That always up. Now, there's no point in saying, yes, we are logical, which is the conscious raising technique. Yes, I'll say you're logical, you say I'm logical, and so on. We're logical, right? But you're not. You haven't gotten anything out of it. But it's a tremendous, you know, you get to sort of see that actually it's horrifying how illogical most of the arguments are. And the very people, well, as a matter of fact, I knew a man a couple of years, and he was always saying, he was always pontificating, right? And I kind of thought something was wrong, but I couldn't put my finger on it. Then I started doing logic, and he said, you know, fine, we couldn't speak to each other because he said, I've become a logic chopper. Meaning that I would say, isn't that a contradiction you just said? All of a sudden, you know, he lost his thought. So it does kind of clarify your life, too. So these methods are very important in terms